You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Far fewer people got the flu last year, mostly due to mitigation efforts to control the spread of COVID-19. This flu season could be different, though, because more people have returned to work, are shopping and eating in restaurants, and kids are in school. On today's program, we examine several questions about the flu and COVID overlapping, including will there be more flu cases, how to tell the difference between the two, and will there be room in hospitals with the increase in COVID fueled by the Delta variant. Joining us is infectious disease specialist Dr. John Goldman of UPMC. Dr. Goldman, welcome to the program. As I just said, flu cases were way down last year. Would you agree that it was because of masking, social distancing, wiping down surfaces, efforts to stop the spread of COVID?
So I think that flu last year was way down because it's easier to stop flu than it is to stop COVID. There was a lot of social distancing. There was a lot of masking. And in fact, we had less flu at the peak of last year's season than we usually see in the summer when there is basically no flu around anymore. So the social distancing we used to prevent COVID actually worked much better on the flu. So I strongly agree that the flu was basically wiped out with masks, with hand washing, with washing off surfaces.
So more people, as I described, are back at work than at the beginning of last flu season. There are more children back in school, in person for classes, more people eating at restaurants. Because people have been vaccinated against COVID, more people vaccinated against COVID, they may not be wearing masks or they may be acting as they normally would before COVID. So what do you expect with flu this year?
Expect it to be more. And we are that really one of two things that may happen. One is that because there are enough people masking and social distancing, we may see less. Or two, we've already seen some of the viruses that typically occur later in the year in kind of cold and flu season start up earlier. And probably that's because there wasn't the boost of immunity that you get from natural infection for example, with RSV, with respiratory syncytial virus. And so some of them have already started up. And so I think what we're balancing is continued social distancing, continued masking, with we all may be a little more susceptible to the flu because so few people got it last year. I think that's an extremely good argument to encourage people to get their flu shots this year.
You say that you've already seen it. In what ways? I mean, when you say that you've seen some things that you normally would see later in the season.
So UPMC follows the kids, for example, who get viral panels. And we've seen a number of the viruses show up at a higher rate earlier in the season than they typically would on those viral panels. So I think that we are a little bit worried that this may come back stronger because of the lack of flu last year, kind of like other viruses that have come back earlier because of the relative lack of their transmission last year.
So when you say come back earlier, are you talking about earlier than before COVID or just earlier than last year?
I am talking about earlier than they typically occur. So we're seeing some of these viruses in the late summer, early fall, when we typically don't see them until the late fall, early winter.
So you touched on this, Dr. Goldman, but what steps can people take to avoid the flu?
So I think the most important one is getting your flu shot. The flu shots are very effective. They will prevent you from getting the flu, and they will prevent you from they will prevent you from giving it to your family members in high-risk patients, people who are older, people who have other medical conditions. They have a great effect. In fact, in older patients, people with high-risk conditions, getting the flu shot actually decreases your risk of death by roughly 50% during flu season. I think with all of the attention on COVID, we have to keep in mind that in a normal season, flu has a big effect. There are about 250,000 hospitalizations, there are 20,000 to 30,000 deaths. And we do not want the flu season and continued COVID transmission to happen at the same time, because it will risk overloading our healthcare system. So best thing you can do is get a flu shot. Clearly, masking helps. We don't expect people to mask in the absence of COVID. Good hand washing helps. COVID is mostly airborne, so that's one of the reasons we put so much of an emphasis on masks. The flu has a lot of transmission by surfaces, so people cough on a table, a doorknob. They cough on their hand and touch a doorknob, a light switch. Someone else comes by and touches that same doorknob or light switch or table and then touches their face and infects themselves. Most of us touch our face between 15 and 20 times an hour. So the flu shot and good hand washing are probably the best things we can do to keep ourselves from getting the flu during this upcoming season.
A question I'm sure many people have, can you get a flu shot and COVID-19 vaccination at the same time?
Yes, you can. Initially, when we gave out the vaccines, the CDC recommended that you wait 2 weeks between getting a COVID shot and any other vaccination. They've changed that. And in fact, at UPMC, we will have clinics for our employees where you can get both a flu shot and a COVID shot at the same time.
Do you do the same arm?
You probably could. I wouldn't. The COVID shot and the flu shot both tend to hurt a bit at the injection site in the arm. So if I get a booster and a flu shot at the same time, I'll get them in different arms.
Yeah, that's not a question you think of very often, but that's been the biggest complaint I have heard from most people who have gotten the COVID vaccination. Yes, there have been some who have had some symptoms of feeling sick and that kind of thing, but most people say that their arm being a little bit sore is the biggest one. So I expected that you would say two different arms to do that. As we have seen, there's a segment of the population who haven't and won't get vaccinated against COVID. Could that carry over to fewer people getting a flu vaccination? I mean, their thinking may be, I'm not getting one, so I'm not getting the other.
I would guess it could. The difference is the objections to the COVID shot tend to be much more political and much more, it's a new thing, I don't trust it. There just aren't the same conspiracy theories running around about the flu shot. No one says that the flu shot microchips you, for example. So I just think because, the people who are hardcore anti-vaxxers are hardcore anti-vaxxers for both COVID and the flu. But I think there are a lot of people who get all of their other vaccines but are uncomfortable with COVID. And I don't think there's the same politics that surrounds the flu shot as surrounds the COVID shot.
Are people even thinking about the flu?
I think most people aren't yet. One, we didn't see it at all last year. And two, we just don't, we have a bigger threat. So far, COVID has killed 660,000 Americans. It now has killed more Americans than the pandemic influenza of 1918. Obviously, the country was a lot smaller then. But typical flu season kills 20,000 to 30,000 people. Typical flu season strains our hospitals. It doesn't overload them. And so I think people are thinking less about the flu simply because the flu is a lesser threat.
We're going to be back and answer more of your questions about the flu and COVID overlapping this year with Dr. John Goldman. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Thank you for joining us for our fall fundraising campaign on WITF. I'm Kara Williams-Fry, Chief Content Officer at WITF, and I am joined this morning by Ron Hetrick, our President and CEO. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kara. Great to be here with you again today.
Yeah. This is Wednesday. We're in the middle of our fall fundraising campaign, and we're listening to Smart Talk. And Smart Talk is one of your best sources for trusted, accurate news and information, as well as Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Here and Now. We have so many shows that you know you can trust that you're listening to on a daily basis, because we're going to give you the unbiased facts. And whether the story involves politics, the pandemic, employment, the economy, international events, the list goes on. Local social issues, you can be certain of one thing. WITF will provide unbiased and thorough coverage. And that's not unprecedented. It's what WITF has done every day for over 50 years, and we'll continue to provide you with that calm, rational, complete coverage into the next year and the year after that. But we need your help to do that. So please give generously as you can to support the continued quality work of WITF. Go to WITF.org/give now to contribute to our fall fundraising campaign today. Or give us a call at 1-800-233-9483 to give by phone.
You know, one of the great things that I love about Smart Talk, as I'm out talking to the community and meeting with different people, and although it's been less lately, the thing that always comes up is Smart Talk and just the diverse programming that we have, mm-hmm. The many voices, and I've heard it called eclectic. I'm not sure if you use Scott Lamar in that sentence with eclectic, but he certainly is the Renaissance man of different topics and different abilities.
Oh my God, Scott, are you listening right now? Because he's going to love that eclectic Renaissance man.
But it just reflects that, you know, we're trying to bring different perspectives and different voices to our air and tell the stories that are important and matter to you. So please consider giving a contribution today to show your support for WITF. And, you know, we found that listeners become members when they recognize that they listen to WITF as much as anything else on the radio or even more. And even though that listening may be happening in places other than the car these days, or it might be at home, that, you know, your support is what allows us to stay on air or online. And if this sounds like a good reason to make your first contribution to member-supported WITF, then take a few minutes right now to make a one-time gift. Or consider joining the Sustaining Circle with your ongoing monthly contribution. If you're already a member of WITF, maybe you'll consider making an additional gift to help us bring our fall fundraising campaign to a successful conclusion, perhaps early. No matter how you choose to give, please give now. You can visit WITF.org/give now or give us a call at 1-800-233-9483.
That number again is 1-800-233-9483. And thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Our guest today is infectious disease specialist Dr. John Goldman of UPMC. We're talking about the overlap of influenza, the flu season, and COVID-19. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Goldman, we have a few questions from listeners. One is it too early to get the flu shot?
That's a very good question. I do not think so. In the past, it's been recommended to get the flu shot as soon as it's available. I've gotten it as early as late August. Right now, it's about the end of September. It's a good time to get it. Flu season typically starts in late December, early January, February. It rarely goes into March and April. If you get it now, you will be covered for the peak part of the flu season. I'm personally going to get it within the next week or so.
One of the things that we've learned from the whole COVID experience is that vaccines have a shelf life for how long they are completely effective. So taking that over now to or using that information on flu shot, typically how long is a flu shot effective?
It's typically effective for about 4 to 6 months. There's a more rapid decline in effectiveness in people who are older, which is sometimes why people recommend especially older people, get the flu shot in early October as opposed to late September. I think a better way of handling that is we give some of the higher dose vaccines to people who are above the age of 65. And then it has some protection from season to season, but there's what's called antigenic drift. In English, the flu virus changes a little bit from year to year, and the flu shot from the previous year becomes less effective because of that change. So the flu shot is updated year to year. So it's around 4 to 6 months with a more rapid decline in elderly people who are older.
What you're referring to, many of us laymen call the strain of the flu. Do we know what strain of the flu we're looking at in North America this year?
So in North America, we have our usual influenza B and the strains of influenza B. We have H1N1, which is the 2009 swine flu, the novel influenza. And then we have H3N2, which is actually the original pandemic influenza from 1968, which still circulates today. Those are the flu strains that have been circulating the last since really 2009. We hope that it's an H1N1 season because those flus tend to be more mild. The H3N2 tends to cause a more severe season. It is, however, a good example of what may happen with COVID. The H3N2 was the pandemic influenza of 1968. It was a severe influenza that year. It killed 100,000 Americans, but with vaccination and partial immunity, it's now simply just the flu. That's kind of what I expect to happen with COVID.
One of the things that I know infectious disease specialists like yourself and other doctors and scientists look at is what happened in the Southern Hemisphere when, you know, they have the opposite seasons that we do. What did they see in Australia, for example, this year?
This year they had H3N2 and H1N1, and they had a very mild season. But if you recall, a lot of the Southern Hemisphere is really doing very strong social distancing. Mm.
So Darcy asks, how well matched is the flu vaccine we have this year to the strains this year?
We'll know that when the strains occur. There's always a little bit of guesswork because you're obviously making the strains, the vaccines, before you see what is truly circulating. We expect it to be fairly well matched, but we won't know until the actual strains start infecting people.
If you're just tuning in, our guest today is Dr. John Goldman of UPMC. He's an infectious disease specialist. We're talking about the overlap of influenza, the flu, and COVID this year. Last year, flu cases were way down because people were social distancing, wearing masks, washing their hands. But with vaccinations, there may be more people who are out and about this year. There may be more flu cases. Who knows? 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. Give us a call. And you also can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Question, we received an email, Dr. Goldman. What do you say to COVID deniers who use flu death rates to argue that COVID is not a big deal? They say that more people die from the flu.
Well, first of all, that's demonstrably not true. We've had 660,000 Americans die. That's one in every 500 people. In a typical flu season, we have 10 to 20,000 people die. In a severe flu season, we have 50. The highest in recent memory was about 80,000 people. So the flu is a lot less deadly than COVID. Now, one of the things you see typically on social media, typically on Facebook, is this is a disease that 199 out of 200 people survive, which is absolutely true. The best estimate of our death rates are about 0.5%. Best estimate of the flu death rates is 0.1%. And you have to remember that if the flu goes through the whole population without any, if COVID goes through the whole population without any vaccination, you'd expect somewhere between 1 and 1.5 million Americans to die, much, much higher than a flu season. In fact, it's something like 100 flu seasons. So, in addition, the flu, 90% of the people who die from the flu are above the age of 65. In COVID, it's 80%. So COVID kills roughly twice as many young people as the flu. And what we've really seen with vaccination, because we've been very good at vaccinating the older population, in Pennsylvania, more than 95% of the people above the age of 65 have had the COVID vaccination, is the death rates in people above the age of 65 have plummeted. And so right now, the typical patient in our hospital with COVID is an unvaccinated, relatively young person. And we've had recently had people in their 30s, their 40s, and their 50s die from COVID. So it is not only more deadly, but it's more deadly to young people right now.
Let's take a phone call from Kathy in Campbelltown. Kathy, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi. Perhaps I missed this. I'm just tuning in recently. I've become aware that there is a combination flu and COVID vaccine. Is that in fact the case?
That they are working on a combination flu and COVID vaccine that is not available right now. So you could get them at the same time, but you can't get them in the same shot.
Okay.
Kathy, one thing I will mention that Dr. Goldman talked about earlier, you can get a flu shot and a COVID shot at the same time, but it would be in two different arms. But yeah, that's good to hear that they are working on a combination shot. Thank you very much for your call. Dr. Goldman, one of the questions that arises all the time, and this is one that from the very beginning of the pandemic, people have asked, if you're feeling sick, asking yourself, okay, do I have COVID or do I have the flu? How do you tell the difference?
I would say you can't. So there are only a few things that are characteristic of COVID, and that's the loss of your sense of taste or the loss of your sense of smell. If either of those occur, then you almost certainly have COVID and don't have the flu or any other virus. But especially in people who are vaccinated and tend to have mild disease, COVID can present just like the flu: temperatures, muscle aches, runny nose. And in fact, it can be very mild. A little bit of a runny nose, a little bit of a sore throat, a little bit of what people think are allergies. And in fact, especially early on in the pandemic, I was fooled multiple times because I saw people who I thought they just aren't sick enough to have COVID, and they turned out to have it. The problem is that you really can't distinguish the two without a test.
That's the only way to do it.
Unless you have lost your sense of smell or you've lost your sense of taste, you can't tell the difference on the basis of symptoms.
See, you know, I've thought about this loss of sense of taste and smell, and I've never experienced it before. And I just wonder, okay, I mean, is it that pronounced that you'll know right off the bat that, I'm eating something that I normally like and I don't taste it, or something that, I smell and I don't smell it?
Yeah, people tend to notice it. I've even heard of people who do things like have tried to eat really spicy foods and not been able to taste the intense spices. So it's a pretty noticeable symptom.
Mm. Are hospitals in a position to treat those suffering from a bad case of the flu, considering that there has been more people going to the hospital being treated for COVID-19 and the Delta variant who are unvaccinated?
The whole medical system has been strained by COVID. We do not want to have the typical strain that occurs during flu season happening at the same time. There is the strain from ongoing COVID infection, but we will be prepared. We are actually putting a lot of thought, a lot of time, and a lot of effort to making sure that we are prepared.
But there are some places in the country. I mean, one that I think of right off the bat is Idaho, where Idaho is right now, the word that's being used is rationing care because they are overwhelmed in ICUs with COVID cases.
Yeah, no, there clearly are parts of the country right now that are overwhelmed by just COVID, especially in the areas where people are much less vaccinated. And putting a strain of COVID on top of the flu, a flu surge on top of a COVID surge, would be very difficult to deal with. Fortunately, in Pennsylvania, we have a pretty good vaccinations rate. So although we're seeing more cases, and we're seeing fewer hospitalizations, and we actually are seeing fewer patients in the ICU. And again, we'll be prepared. But yeah, no, if you have a surge from COVID and a surge from the flu at the same time, it has the potential to overwhelm healthcare systems.
Are there other infectious illnesses or diseases that to be concerned about more so than even usual this fall or winter?
I think that there may be just more nonspecific viral illnesses because there were so few last winter. And so people may spend more time sick. Fortunately, most people don't end up getting really sick or in the hospital from those. But I suspect there will be more people kind of with the common cold because they didn't have them last winter and they didn't kind of get the immune boost that would help prevent last winter, that would help prevent disease this winter.
Okay, here's a basic question, but I think a lot of people will ask themselves this question. You know, we talked about the differences between COVID and flu, the way they present. What about a cold and the flu? I mean, this is a question that was asked every year before COVID. How do you tell the difference between a cold and flu?
It can be difficult because the flu can present with full-blown flu-like symptoms, and flu can be pretty mild. On the other hand, the flu tends to give you a fever. The flu tends to give you a headache. The flu tends to give you more muscle aches. So classic flu, you're sick and you feel a lot sicker than you are with a common cold. You'll have a fever, you'll have a headache, you'll have muscle aches. The issue is that there are a lot of times when you get the flu, it's relatively mild and it's not hard to mistake it for a cold, because instead of giving you all of the fevers, chills, muscle aches, it just makes you a little sick. So it isn't uncommon to mistake the flu for a cold. And it isn't uncommon to mistake COVID for the cold because it can also present with mild symptoms. Mm.
Infectious disease specialist, Dr. John Goldman of UPMC. Dr. Goldman, always good talking with you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
Thanks for joining us for our fall fundraising campaign on WITF. I'm Kara Williams-Fry, the Chief Content Officer here at WITF, and Ron Hetrick is joining us. He's our President and CEO. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kara. Great to be here with you again today.
Yes, it's fun. We're actually here in person, which we all enjoy. It's been a long 18 months where we haven't actually been together in the same space, but we've been together working hard. But we're starting to kind of come back. We all have our masks. But we also know that, you know, we care about our community, we care about each other, so we've been doing everything we need to do to keep ourselves safe so that we can keep sharing information with you. But during this fall fundraising campaign, we're asking you one important question. Does WITF matter enough to you to support it? So think about it. When you support WITF, you help produce all the national and international coverage you hear on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. You help initiate informative conversations like ours today on Smart Talk, and then on 1A and Fresh Air, and you help to create enlightening diversions with Radiolab, This American Life, and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is one of my personal favorites, I must say. Your support helps fund local initiatives like Learning at Home and Your Learning Neighborhood, as well as Transforming Health. And one of our recent acclaimed radio documentary series was called Sacred Ground, with Tim Lambert's unique connection and perspective on United Flight 93.
It was, if you've not had the chance to listen to that yet, even if we're a few weeks after the anniversary of 9/11, I know that the way that he paid tribute to the families and the different community members that were involved was really moving, and really just so I'm personally very thankful that we were able to tell that story through Tim's eyes and share that with all of you in the community.
And it was really fun because Tim got to team up with Scott Detrow, who used to work with us here, and he now works at NPR. And so having their camaraderie and having them tell such a heartfelt, thoughtful, important story, it's hard to put a price on that. It's invaluable, and it's essential to you and your connection to the community, the state, the nation, and the world. Consider that, and then determine whatever amount you're able to and comfortable to give to support this vital news service that you depend on every day. Go to WITF.org/give now, or call us at 1-800-233-9483.
And, you know, to make a contribution like Kara's pitching now, you know, it's quick, it's safe, it's easy. Mm-hmm. And we ask you to do it in a way that fits in your budget. You know, you'll have the satisfaction of knowing that your one-time gift of either $20, $50, $60, or maybe even $100 or more is making it possible for WITF to continue to bring you the trusted news and information that you count on every day. Or consider becoming a Sustaining Circle member with your ongoing monthly gift of $5 a month, $15 a month, $25 a month, or more, whatever works for you. And then sit back and listen, knowing that your monthly contribution provides WITF with a consistent, reliable source of funding that keeps us going strong. You can also consider giving a one-time gift of $1,200 or an ongoing monthly gift of $100. And you'll join people like Kara and I in the Premier Circle with along with another 300 or so like-minded individuals who help give to WITF at that level. So big or small, matched or unmatched, your one-time donation or your ongoing donation make a big difference. So please consider going to WITF.org/give now or call us at 1-800-233-9483 to make your gift of support. And thank you.
Thank you very much. You hear us. You know that we're working here on a daily basis. We're also supporters of WITF. We're also people who live in this community. So it is very, very important to us, to our families, to our communities, that we're all in this together. And you can support this vital news service that you depend on every day with any amount that's right for you. So go to WITF.org/give now or call us at 1-800-233-9483. And thank you.